surpassed.
It used to be a newspaper.
The Bud Podcast. Not outclassed. Wonders en masse.
Get it on Leinster and we're up to the end of the game.
The Bud Podcast.
My name's Mark Isles, and I'm the chief football writer of the Bolton News. There's 10 games to go, Wanderers are gunning for automatic promotion, and we're nearly as excited as these guys. Scenes. Time to tell you about the latest flash sale for subscription to the Bolton News. Starts on the day this podcast comes out, in fact, Friday, March the 8th, and runs all the way to Wednesday, March the 20th. For £4, you can get 4 whole months of unlimited Bolton Wanderers articles and all the other articles we do. Apparently, we write about something other than football. I had no idea. But anyway, all the stuff that we do, especially for subscribers as well, and there's loads and loads of features, and there's loads in the pipeline as well, especially with the international break coming up, so don't miss out on a thing. It's a really big time to be following Bolton Wanderers, and you want to absorb everything you can. The subscription link in the notes of this very podcast has got details of how you can subscribe, but you can also go to theboltonnews.co.uk/subscribe, or look on any of our social media stuff, our X, Twitter, Instagrammy, TikTok stuff. It's all there. There's links there. So just go there and try it out. £4 for 4 months. Okay, it's time to introduce my co-host for this podcast and a man who has 2 identifiable moods. He's either relatively upbeat or whatever the hell he was last week. It's Henry Hewitt. Henry, have you cheered up, mate?
I have, yeah. That last 30 minutes on Tuesday definitely helped. I did. I listened back to it and I thought, God, it was proper yin and yang from the week before. But I think we're all in that sort of situation. So we did say on last week's podcast, if we start this week's podcast in second place, then we'd take it. And we have done, so you'd have to take it.
Well, even Ian Everett was sounding blue. He must have bloody listened to you last week. It was most unlikely. But to be fair, I mean, it seems to have done the trick. So I think we'll claim a partial assist on that one.
Yeah, let's not talk about the first 50 minutes of the Barnsley game. but we'll take an assist for the rest of the week.
Yeah, I mean, it's better. I mean, I think the way that Barnsley game finished will do everybody the world of good. Certainly the fans, it's been a much cheerier environment on the old social media in the last couple of days. But how did the late goal go down in the Hewitt household?
Well, it went down because at the moment, because another podcast to work on, someone who is on that is actually in Celebrity Big Brother. So I have to watch that. So I was watching it on my phone, trying to be as quiet as possible so I could watch Big Brother and also not wake my child up. So it went down as if somebody had put the house on mute. So it was a very exuberant but quiet. But having spoken to my in-laws, they definitely said a draw was a fair result. They had the better of the first hour, and then Bolton just woke up and dominated the rest. And I thought, well, that's fair enough.
It was amazing, really, because at 2-0, and I mean, Ian Everett, after the game, said that he was quite happy with what they did in the first 20 minutes. It was very tight first 20 minutes. I wouldn't like to split the difference on who was on top, but it didn't feel fantastic. Certainly, second half of the first half, Barnsley on top, got that goal. It all got a bit wobbly after that. And then the second one shortly after half time. At that point in time, at 2-0 down, you're kind of looking at it and thinking, that's just not going to happen. You know, what is the impact of this going to be? Because it felt like it was going to be a defining game in Bolton's season. But like you say, a bit of a switch just on and they started playing. And Barnsley couldn't handle them. There was nothing at all coming the opposite direction from Barnsley. They were absolutely pinned in. And really, to come away from being 2-0 down and then being a little bit miffed that you've not won the game, it's incredible, really.
It is, yeah. I mean, I do put it down to the fact that when Dacus Cogley got injured, that's the point where I switched the match off the big telly in the living room to my phone. And it was like two different games. Like, the one I watched on my telly and then replaced it with Big Brother to the one that went and watched on my phone. Two different performances, two different games entirely. And, I think in the end, you're right. I think when you take into account Bodvarsson at the post, Collins was through, and then I at the time thought he got dragged back. Obviously, the ref didn't agree. Magoma threw on goal. We had a lot of chances in that last half an hour, and we should have won the game in the end. But, you know, I think it's important to... And I've not seen anyone go, oh, well, we've got a draw, but we should have won. It was a great moment to get that draw. But, yeah, it's one of those... One of those results where at the end of the season, you'll look back and you'll either say that was a point gained and it got us over the line, or you could look and go, well, if Bodvarsson has scored, or if Magoma would have scored, we could have got the extra 2 points we needed. So I guess we won't know till then. But at the moment, it's definitely a lot more positive. And, you know, I think I in particular mentioned last week about the mentality of the players in these big games. And for the first hour, you did think, yeah, they're not big game players. And I said last week, they'll be fine against Cambridge and then Barnsley will lose, and it was going that way. But to turn it around like they did and just flip that switch, it was kind of like a gung-ho switch, wasn't it? Like you can do on Football Manager, but it works. But, you know, as we'll talk later on, it means nothing if they can't get a result in the next game.
Yeah, it's getting to that stage, isn't it, where everything's having that kind of knock-on effect. I think if they score maybe 10 minutes earlier, then they probably do win that game if they do equalise that bit earlier. But those late goals are incredible. One thing I wanted to ask, and you said about Josh Dacus Cogley's injury. He goes, he got a bang on his foot, and that prompted a little bit of a defensive reshuffle. He brought Iredale on, moved Owen Toll onto the right hand side of the three, and then played Gethin Jones as wing back. And a lot of people kind of pointing to that and saying, well, actually, they looked more balanced. That is kind of that's how it stemmed, the whole revival stemmed from. Is it worth considering now going forward, do you think?
I think it is. And I think, you know, I know a lot of fans have been talking about Jones and you know, a few of the other defenders. And is it, you know, when you've got the likes of, say, Forrester on the bench and Iredale, I thought, has done very well since Christmas. Yeah, you've got very good players on the bench that are just not getting the game time. And I think when you look at Bolton's last month in particular, the amount of goals we've conceded, obviously we've not got as many points as what we would have hoped. I think it's natural that you look at changes. But I think as well, you've got to take into consideration, I'm sure Ian Evans, you know, like this, is that, you know, you look at the... I mean, the easy thing to say for me is that you look at the last half an hour and go, well, why didn't Bolton play about the full game? But you can't. I mean, imagine doing that for 90 minutes. You know, I mean, it would be great to watch, and I'm sure we'd win the game 7 or 8-0, but it's just not viable. So maybe that switch and that change worked because we were chasing the game, whereas when you consider it over a course of 90 minutes, maybe it won't. But, you know, as we speak now, I'm not sure whether we know the seriousness or not as seriousness of the injury to Dacus Cogley. So it might have to be a decision that has to be made anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, we don't know about Dacus Cogley as things stand, but I think going back to the goals that Barnsley did score and the way that they took the lead, it was, you could see it on Ian Evans' face, he was very, very annoyed that actually it was the kind of the tactical instruction that they'd been given before the game. Don't pass inside, don't, because that's where Barnsley were going to dominate. They are very, very strong in the middle of the park, and every time the ball went in there, it seemed like, you know, Thomason or McGough, you know, whoever was getting hold of it didn't have any time, didn't have any space at all. And so every time, and Bolton's two goals stemmed from poor passes into that sort of area of the pitch. It might have just been that the tactical side of things worked better as well. They actually did what they were being told to do. And you could kind of see that same movement through midfield, or they kept things quite wide, and they definitely hit the front two more direct late on in the game, which is one of the big instructions that they got, is that the strikers were being left kind of man for man with the centre halves, and so they would have to be a little bit more direct or get it round the outside a bit quicker, and that's what they did. So yes, they were chasing the game, and yes, the psychology of the game changed once they'd got the goal and Adebayo had scored. But I think also there was a tactical element to it. It's like, ah, hang on a minute, this is how we do it, and it kind of clicked from there. So it's an interesting game. But I tell you what, one stat that stood out to me, and Cambridge was a pretty academic affair, if you'll excuse the pun. 44 shots Bolton have had in the last two games, which is quite incredible, really, considering Wigan and Blackpool, and you're kind of going back into February and January, where it was all a little bit bitty. It certainly wasn't free flowing. I think they seem to have found a bit of joie de vivre now in attack.
Yeah, we said last week, didn't we, on the podcast, that why aren't they shooting from the edge of the area? And I think, against Cambridge, before Thomason's goal, Santos had a crack, which the goalie saved. And I nudged my dad and was like, yeah, they've listened to the podcast. They've listened to me say that. Obviously, they haven't. But, like, I think it's... We were just saying last week that, you know, you why not have a shot? Rather than pass it around the area and just do the same thing a million times, why not just have a shot? And
When it's
seems
on.
That they've been doing that. Yeah, when it's on. And Thomason did that, and he took the goal very, very well. Mm. It's easy to say when you've come out of the back and scored four goals, and it's like, right, well, that's simple. I know it's not as simple as that. I know there's other games, like Saturday, for example, might be a completely different game where we only have eight shots but score two or three goals. But, it does seem that was, for me, the one of the problems with Wigan is that we were having all this possession and all this play, and the goalie never meant to make a save apart from Tolles from 30 yards. So it was good that they changed it about. It was interesting to hear Ian Everett afterwards actually talk about how the tactical sort of thing, because I did think at the time, even though we were poor, I did think with the Barnsley goals that there was an element of luck to both of them. The fact that it just dropped to McAtee, and then the second one, it was whatever, pinball in the area and it drops to their centre-half. Whereas with Bolton, we had a chance, the chance cleared off the line in the first half, which dropped to Collins, but just a bit away from him. And other moments like that, yet Barnsley, he just drops to him. But it was interesting hearing him talk afterwards and saying, no, we said to them, don't do that, because that will happen. So I think sometimes people can look at the management and look at Ian Everett and blame his tactics or his substitutions or whatever, but sometimes it is actually the players. And if they've been told don't do that and they do it, and you must have seen, he was so frustrated going into the second half, wasn't he? The first half with Coleman and all of them, the passing. Sometimes it is just the players.
Yeah, well, look, they're, a lot of them are League One players for a reason. That's the bottom line, isn't it? They're playing in League One. If they made the right decision all the time, they wouldn't be in this division without a question. But look, they sorted it out, and hopefully, they start on the front foot. It's another big week, isn't it? Because, I mean, Exeter, long trip. It's certainly a winnable game for Bolton. There's no question about that. And then Oxford again at home on the telly. Again, it's a game that I think suits Bolton. And if they can get a couple of wins this week, if they can get 4 points for me, but if they can get a couple of wins, particularly when you look at the fixtures that other promotion chasers have got, this could be another big week.
It could, yeah. I am hoping that ITV and Sky Sports do a deal that means I can watch half and half Big Brother and the Bolton game on Tuesday. But it's a different week because Bolton are going into it. I know Oxford are in the playoffs, but we are going into it in favour, as favourites in both games. And these are the games now. Suddenly, we're going from, we've got 10 games left. This time next week, we'll have 8 left. and the games are dwindling down. And you know, I know on Saturday everyone won, but it's not going to be like that every weekend. No. And I think you have to win, and if you don't win, it could be massive, like you know, for Bolton. So yeah, big games, but they're two tough games. We've never really had the rub of the green when we played Oxford at home. I think we won the first year we came up, but then we lost last year. I think we've had a draw as well a few years earlier than that. And then Exeter are going to want to make up for what happened earlier in the season. So they're two very tough games. So we need the mentality needs to be strong. But, you know, I have said the mentality against the big sort of bigger games, the teams at the very top, has been quite weak. In games against this sort of opposition, in these, you know, I know Oxford are, what, sixth, seventh or whatever, but games against teams who are in Exeter's position, we do tend to do quite well in. So I am quietly confident.
Just to recap, Pompey, the leaders, of course, they've got Blackpool away on Saturday, and then they follow that up. They're at home to Burton on Tuesday. Derby County away at Bristol Rovers, which is no gimme at all, on Saturday. And then they've got Reading, who are in a decent run of form, Reading, at home on the Tuesday. And your mates at Barnsley, they've got Lincoln at home, which you would expect them to win on Saturday. And then let me have a gander. What have they got? I don't think they're playing Tuesday. Oh, yes, they are. They're away at Carlisle. Yeah, we might need a double win to keep ahead of Barnsley this week, but it is possible. Anything is possible. It feels so much better. And so let's have a look at some headlines.
News. So, I mean, this was, I don't know whether this just came after the a bad week and he was very emotional, or whether there's any truth in it, but Ian Everett's future and happiness at Bolton has come under the microscope a little bit this week. You were there in the press conference. We've only really heard snippets of it. What did he say, and what do you feel the context of it was, like looking at it a few days afterwards?
Yeah, it's interesting because it didn't just emanate just from that one little clip that you've heard quite a bit of. And that was the last question I asked Ian Everett in the press conference. And I just said, can you enjoy it? And he very quickly said, nope, can't enjoy it. You know, I've not, this week's hit me very, very hard. Previously, and I would say last Thursday in the press conference, there were a couple of times where he kind of went towards saying something like that and then maybe just changed his mind a little bit. It would obviously, he'd had a tough time, whether it be a week, a month, whatever. It's not been easy for anybody, has it? And it certainly hasn't been easy for the fans, I know that. I mean, I said to Ian Everett, in fact, I said, if I'm knackered, I don't know what you feel like, because it felt like we'd done very little except for kind of preview match reaction. It's been 2 weeks, two games a week rather for such a long time now. So I think everybody's on their last nerve. I think everybody needs a little bit of a break. And I think that international break can't come soon enough for anybody. Ian Everett obviously said he will review things in the summer. He said that in several different guises a couple of times. And I think a lot of people have kind of read into it that's almost like a threat, that, you know, I will look at my own position in the summer. And I think to some extent that is true, to a very, very vague extent, is that I think everybody at a football club, once you've got to the end of the season, has a period where they're kind of looking ahead, right, okay, is everything right for me? I think everybody does that. I can't imagine there's many managers that don't have some degree of thought from that point of view. And when everything was going against them, and you know, Bolton, if they don't go up, then I think Ian Everett's probably within his rights to sit there and say, right, well, you know, is this working for everybody? You know, am I doing myself justice here? Am I doing the club justice here? And probably from the club's point of view as well. I don't think that's anything abnormal at all. But I think the words were basically anchored in a crappy week. You know, the Blackpool, his former club, the way it went down, awful. The way the Wigan game went, where the team actually played to his satisfaction in terms of competing for the ball and controlling the game, but then to get hit with that sucker punch and for it to fall to pieces, then with all the aftermath as well with the players and all that kind of thing. Then there was the disciplinary hearing. So there's been a lot of stuff around, and I can completely understand him kind of having a couple of needing a couple of days just to rest and recuperate. Everybody does, don't they, when we've had a crappy week at work. So, hey. But that is not to say that it's kind of, you know, he's not thinking about his position as on a regular basis and vice versa. Right? It's a fluid thing in football. That's the thing. You've got to accept that. We've talked about it loads of times on here, haven't we? About will there come a time where there is an offer from somewhere else for Ian Everett that he can't refuse? It's possible. It's certainly possible. You could never rule it out. So at the minute, you know, he's happy. You could tell by the look on his face, he was absolutely delighted with Tuesday night and the way that they came back. So, you know, maybe any kind of nagging doubts or anything that the criticism had kind of affected him to any great degree, maybe that has kind of dissipated for now. But it's Bolton, isn't it? You can't do anything without a bit of drama.
No, that's true. I think for me, you know, I don't want to say I took his I took what he said with a pinch of salt, because I didn't, and I think there is an element of truth in it. I think you do reevaluate, and I think even for that split second, and I'm sure in previous summers he's reevaluated and go, am I ready to go again? Yes, I am. Right, end of conversation. Mm. It must be difficult when you are a football manager, because I guess those people in football, like managers or players, they haven't been a fan for a long time. You know, it becomes a job, you know, I guess. Mm. You know, it's so they might not appreciate where the fans are coming from. They might not understand that. They think, well, we're third in the league, or we're second now. Why are fans moaning? Because they've not been in that position for a long, long time. So I can imagine it is very draining for him when, you know, he's trying his best, the players are trying the best, and then you make one slip up and it's not good enough. And I'm sure it came from that. And I'm sure if you ask him when you speak to them in what, 2 hours' time, as we sat here on a Thursday morning, he'll be a lot different. He'll be more happy and ready to go again. And I guess that's just it. But there will be a time where he moves on. And, you know, I know for some fans that'll be the worst thing to ever happen. For others, they'll look and go, well, Big Sam moved on and...
Yeah, look what happened there.
Yeah, it weren't great after that. Maybe a bad analogy, but
yeah.
We had half a season under Owen Coyle, so that was good. But you know, the football club continues, and I feel we are in a good place at the moment, and there's a plan in place at the moment that we will bring in someone to carry on what the good work that he's done. But asking me, would I rather Ian Everett be here doing that? Then yeah, I would. It's just one of those things. But we'll have to see in the summer. He said on multiple occasions he wants to be at Bolton for a long time. He wants to create a legacy. He wants to be the first manager to take a club from League Two to the Premier League. And I believe him in that.
Yeah. I mean, the other kind of side of the debate is that where has this come from, and where does the negativity come from? We did talk last week a bit about social media and the inevitable kind of backlash you get after a defeat. And there's a lot of short-term opinions out there and things. And how reflective that is of a fan base, that how, you know, what percentage of a fan base is on Twitter and is actively talking and making, you know, putting their opinions out there. And I would guess it is relatively small. I haven't got the data or the research, but from my own kind of experiences, a lot of people, certainly what you'd consider the more measured or experienced people that follow football clubs, don't really do too much on social media. And so when you use social media as a barometer of how fans are feeling or how a football club is going, it can be very, very polarizing. And so when, you know, we talk about this like backlash from the supporters, actually what you're talking about is backlash from the supporters who have gone on Twitter and said their piece. A lot of people have not done that, and a lot of people aren't even on it, or Facebook or whatever else. You know, I'm not just pulling Twitter out of thin air there, but yeah, you've got to put everything into some context. And sometimes, certainly when you're on the back end of a crappy week, and I have been there, believe me, you know, you work really hard on something and something goes wrong, or you know, somebody doesn't like an article you've done, or whatever else it may. And sometimes those comments can really get under your skin. And it's very easy to say, well, don't read them. And I'm certainly getting better at that. I kind of leave a lot of stuff alone now and use that mute button or block button more than ever. But, you know, it does feed back. It does feed back, you know, a lot of times on air, you know, or off air rather, for talking to you about whatever's going on at Bolton, and you'll say, oh, I saw so-and-so talking about it. And I won't have seen it because I've probably muted the people you're talking about. But it does feed back. It always washes back at a football club. It's a very gossipy place. And if you're the manager, where pretty much everything goes through you, everybody's looking to strike up a conversation in some way, shape or form with you, a lot of the time it can come back to, you know, what people are saying on social media, or what you are seeing as being the kind of the reflective view of the fans. So for those people who are sitting here and saying, well, just don't read it, just be aware that actually what you're saying does get back in some way, shape or form. It always does. And every opinion does actually carry with it some sort of cause and effect, if you will.
Yeah, well, I guess now, because I say, and I feel that social media is the new radio phoning, really. It's where people can have the say straight after the match. But the thing is, with social media, it's all written in pen. So people, you know, like, if you think 20 years ago, or 25 years ago, when Colin Todd was manager, if someone rang up a radio phone to moan about him, he would have to be listening to it. Now, Ian Everett can go on BBC Sounds and listen to Radio Manchester's phone, and if he wants at any point, he can go online and see what people are talking. And even if somebody said something straight after the game or during a game, and then has calmed down 24 hours later, the manager might see what they've said. Yeah, straight. Mm. So, yeah, but you know, it's a difficult one, because it's easy for me to look and go, like you say, why do you go on it? Why do you, you know, for me, I, you know, as people know, I work in podcasting. That is my job. It's not a hobby, but this is my job. And yeah, some people will come back and say stuff about the podcast I work on or whatever, but then I will know, I'll go, well, I am trained in audio. I used to work in radio. I have experience in this. So I do know what I'm talking about, whereas somebody just says, oh, I listen to podcasts twice a week and I think I know it all, doesn't. And it's the same with footballing. Like, Ian Everett has got his badges. He's been experienced in football. He knows more about football and tactics than I do. Come at me with MLS, then I might have his number on that. But in terms of how to play and to look at tactics and oppositions, then he's better than I am. So if I said something to him, I would fully expect him to go, well, and if he listens to this podcast, I would expect him, if he don't agree, to go, well, what do you know? And he's entitled to do that. So maybe, if it's affecting him or the players or whoever, then maybe we just let it go a little bit. But
you do have to have a relatively thick skin in this gig. There's no question. And you know, from my and relatively limited compared to the football club itself, but from the reactions and the negativity that I can come across in my job, I have found it difficult, very, very difficult sometimes to get over some of the stuff that when you think there and you're like, yes, I have done this for 20 years, you don't know what you're on about. You're talking from a position of complete ignorance, but actually it still keeps you awake at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, just random name calling, anything, just it can get under your skin in the wrong mood. And you do have to get better. You do have to get a little bit more resilient sometimes to some of the criticism, and maybe that comes with more experience. Maybe when I'm sat here in 20 years time doing, you know, kind of the buff hologram version or whatever it's gonna be, maybe I'll be better at that as well. But it's very easily said, but again, it's very easily done. That's the whole thing with social media, isn't it? It's kind of momentary. And half the time, as you pointed out before, half the time you'll put something out, and then actually when you look at it 2 days later, it's probably not how you feel anymore. Or somebody gives you a reasoned argument against what you've just said, and you kind of qualify it, and you're like, oh, well, okay, yeah, fair enough, I understand it. But unfortunately, it's just a series of brain farts, isn't it? Let's be honest.
It is, yeah. No, that's why I appreciate that we record this on a Thursday and not a Tuesday evening, because you thought I was negative last week. If you'd have spoke to me on Tuesday night again after the Wigan game, it would have been a lot worse. But you didn't, and you haven't spoke to me after the Barnsley game. But this week,
I try not to speak to you at all, to be honest.
No, that is true. But Bolton have bounced back after last week, and I don't mean bouncing back as Sam Cosgrove's face bouncing off the Barnsley pitch, which I've got to say I've watched that more than the Williams goal, to be honest. So fair play Santos, and fair play Toll giving it. I saw on the pitch you were giving it a bit to him. So yeah, that bit of bite that we've been after with Bolton players was there. But we digress. So 4 points, we're up to second now with 10 games to go. There was no need to worry, was there, at all? Do we still need to worry?
As I said before the Barnsley game, probably trying to preempt my own kind of disappointment, but there was always going to be a shed ton more to play for. If they had have lost at Barnsley, I wouldn't have been sitting here now. I'd probably be in a worse mood, but you know, there was still plenty to play for. And I guarantee that Barnsley will drop points between now and the end of the season. Pompey will, you know, Peterborough, Derby, the lot of them. There's just so many twists and turns still. There's the scope for twists and turns and over 10 games. Bolton have got to get better in those big games that we were talking about last week. The mentality side of it that you said there. Even when you look at Barnsley in the cold light of day, could they have improved that first, you know, 50 minutes? Yes, of course they could. So there's still time for them to improve. Will that improve with players coming back and a bit of a rest? You'd certainly hope so. So at the minute, we're kind of looking now for Bolton. Can you get up to the international break in a good position? In a position where you're still thinking, yes, it's on for you. And really, this week's going to be a big one, because obviously Derby is the big game before the international break. And, I mean, it's going to be all bets off there. It's just basically get any sort of result you can get to at Derby for me. So really, Exeter and Oxford are the games that you've got to concentrate on and win. If they can get six points in this next two games, I am going to be extremely confident of Bolton. Nothing is written in stone yet, is it?
No, it's not. And I think it's I know it's a cliche, but all Bolton can do is win the games. If they beat Oxford and Exeter and get 6 points, Derby could lose the next two games, and suddenly that Derby game is not a free hit, but there's less pressure on it.
True. Yeah.
You know, you look at the table at the moment, and Barnsley need to win their game in hand, which I think they play against Stevenage in April, which won't be easy. Mm. They need to play their game in hand, and if they win, they go above us. But if by the time they play Stevenage, if we have won every game and Barnsley have dropped points, then it won't matter what we do. So I think...
Goal difference is starting to come into it as well, don't forget. I mean, Barnsley is a three-point gap. I know they've got a couple of goals on Bolton, but even still, if Bolton can get a couple of good results, then even that disappears.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a couple of good results, it's not... I know Derby, I think, are 5 goals ahead of us, but if you get a couple of good results and Derby don't, you're at least getting one. Or, well, if Derby lose, you're getting two back on them. So it's not as if, well, there's one team that's got like 50 goal difference and we're on 25. It's catchable, and it's catchable in the next few games, and it's catchable in that Derby game if you get good results. So Yeah, I think Bolton can just do. They're in the driving seat now. They know that they need to, if they win every game that's left, Barnsley have to do exactly the same. It's in Bolton's hands, but yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But of course, there is always stuff to worry about because it's Bolton Wanderers, and as we all know, they don't do things easily. Right, let's move on to the next headline then. So Josh Sheehan has once again found himself spending more time on the floor than Sam Cosgrove in the last few games. And we've discussed before about being targeted, and he's one of the most fouled players in the league and all of that. He's also treading a fine line in terms of getting suspended. I'm surprised, because he's not been booked for the last two games. No. So I'm surprised about that, because I did worry on Saturday that he would be booked and miss the Barnsley game. He's almost at a suspension. At what point do you know? At what point the suspensions end, or he gets well wiped out? And
I think it's one more game now. Is it 37 right. games?
Right, okay.
37 games.
Well, in that case, then, he needs to survive this next week.
Yep.
I mean, Sheehan's playing really well. Would you, because the Derby game is on the horizon, and I think it's he'll get too much Balmoney if he gets booked again. So, I mean, would you be tempted to take him out, or do you trust him? What would you do?
Well, honestly, if you'd have asked me this before Cambridge, and I expected him to get taken out against Cambridge, because I thought you cannot let him miss Barnsley. But he played, and he's spending so much time picking himself off the floor that he's got no time to foul anybody at the minute. I think descent is the most likely one for him. But no, he's handled himself really, really well the last couple of games. Even though he was kicked from pillar to post again, he is now the second most fouled player in League One, which, considering he's a deep-lying midfielder, is just mad. I think probably his temperament is extremely good. I think if he can get through this next week now, then the cut-off point is there, and he doesn't have to worry about that anymore. I'd keep him in. He's so integral to the way Bolton play now. He really has had such a good season, and he's flying. He's looking really confident.
He is. And another midfielder who's talking about bookings, and George Thomason, a record breaker in terms of bookings this season. I've got to say, if you was to, I don't remember all 17 of his bookings, but I would feel that at least probably 5 or 6 of them were unfair. And I think that's happening now with Thomason. I thought the one on Saturday and Tuesday were unfair after 10 minutes, but how do you see this? Because Ian Everett was talking about the reputation that Thomason's got and how it's unfair. Do you think it's just? Because for me, I don't know, referees. I don't know what research referees do going into games, but I think it'd be unfair if you're looking at how many times players have been booked and stuff, because that surely would sway your decision.
Yeah, I would certainly hope that doesn't happen, and I'd be surprised if it does. I really would be surprised if it does. Whether or not opposition teams look at George Thomason and say, right, well, we can get a cheap yellow card out of this, just make sure you're hitting the ground, maybe. That's probably the extent of it. I mean, the one on Tuesday night, it was a little bit rash, and I think if you're going to give a yellow card for that, I'm okay with it, but you then have to give a yellow card for everything that's a little bit rash in that similar way. And the downside to that was there were 5 fouls in total on Josh Sheehan, but there were at least 2, one from Cannell as in particular, that went right down his back of his legs, and nothing happened. And that was the weird thing, is that if you're going to book George, then okay, book everybody else that has a bit of that about them. let's put it that way. It wasn't a completely soft challenge. It was a free kick for definite. And if the referee thinks that's a yellow card, you just want the consistency there. I don't think referees are looking at George Thomason before a game and thinking, I've got to keep my eye out for him. I just don't I just don't think they're that well researched. To be honest, I can't see them on Soccer Base like I am on a Friday night, and you know, highlighting XGs and assists and what have you. I think they just turn up and flash some cards, to be honest.
Yeah, well, as we found out in the Blackpool game, I don't think they're very researched in their own rules. So
maybe this level,
yeah, maybe thinking that they're looking into players and stuff like that is. Yeah, a bit south of the
referees pull into a car park. It's like which clubs are playing today? Blackpool and Bolton. All right, happy days. No one. Bolton are the white ones, aren't they? Yeah, that's it. Okay, cool.
So moving on to, we can't have headlines without talking about some sort of injuries at Bolton and updates and whatever. I guess Dion Charles is, if not Saturday, should be Tuesday, shouldn't he? He's back.
Yeah, we're certainly hoping so. I think he's back full training, that's for certain. It's just whether they risk him at Exeter or whether you keep him for a home game against Oxford. I suggest it'll be the latter.
Maybe coming off the bench against Exeter, perhaps. Maybe. But if they're on a coach instead of flying, I don't think his knees would do any good for that long on a coach. But the main one, I mean, Charles is important, but I think the main one that people are anxious to get back is Nathan Baxter. And I think, have we had an update on that? Are we looking at a few more weeks?
I think they're looking international break now. So the last we had on the podcast was that he was having the cast taken off his wrist. And by all accounts, there's been some positive signs there. It is healing, but they wanted to be absolutely sure that there's no breakdown. And so they've given him a splint to wear now, which is kind of a step up. And they say that by the time the international break comes around, post-derby, they should have enough healing for him to resume training and to be back in contention. But I will say this about Joel Coleman, and he's had his critics, us among them, for certain things, certainly Blackpool. So I think personally that his last two games against Cambridge and on Tuesday at Barnsley have been by far his most solid. I think he's settling down. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Cambridge, he could have literally settled down with a newspaper in his penalty area and he would have been fine. I can't remember much of them. But the Barnsley one, yeah, I mean, the goals you can't really blame him for. So I think other than that, his kicking was a bit erratic at times. But I think the way that he plays, and we spoke about this a few weeks ago, but the way he plays is that he will catch the ball and look to get it out and look to get Bolton upfield. And one out of five of them may work, but it creates a chance and an opportunity. And I'm sure we'll score from one of them at some point. I think he is settling down. I'm like everyone else. I'd rather Baxter be there, and it's been a shame that he's been out. But I think it's been good for Coleman that he's been in and had this opportunity. Because I think he's a good goalkeeper, and no matter what some people say, I think he is one of the better sub goalies that we've had, especially in the last 10 years. You know, there's not been many, maybe Lonergan and the Howard and Anik sort of double acts, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some, Jilks when he was there, but I do put him in that bracket than a Billy Crellin bracket. So I'm glad to see that he's settled down. And I think the players are starting to trust him a bit more as well. Passing it back to him and stuff like that.
The Billy Crellin bracket. That sounds like an episode of The Big Bang Theory.
It does, doesn't it?
Fire away.
right, next headline. And we haven't talked about this because we haven't really talked about the Cambridge game. There weren't much to talk about apart from the fact that Aaron Collins has got his first goal for Bolton, which I thought he took very well. I thought he came out in that second half a lot more confident player for me. I thought the first half he didn't really touch the ball, but apart from, I think he did the cross for Dacus Cogley, didn't he? But other than that, he didn't really have the opportunities. And he came out second half, he looked fresh, he looked a better, you know, more confident, and he took his goal well. So it's good to see. But I mean, he's been talking after that game and saying that he's found it difficult settling in at Bolton.
Yeah, well, sometimes I think getting these things off the chest and you can see the kind of psychological element. I think that goal has done him an absolute world of good. I thought he played really well against Barnsley, particularly second half. But sometimes you kind of disregard the fact that the footballer is just a bloke doing a job and he has a life outside of football. And Collins has been based in the Southwest with his friends and his family for a very long time. Only moved up here, obviously, end of January, beginning of February when Bolton signed him. Hasn't had a house. He's been living in a hotel. Basically, very little socialising going on other than going out for a meal here and there with a few of the players or that kind of thing and training, when Bolton get to train. So it must have been pretty tough because it isn't even like a normal week of training where you're in a couple of days and there's a bit more of a kind of a social element to it. Actually, it's mostly rest and recovery in between the games. There's not a lot of training and actual group work going on. So it must be quite a lonely existence, to be truthful. So maybe when his earlier games were being assessed, we probably could have taken that into consideration. And I'm glad he came out and said it, to be honest. And it was a very decent interview. I think we're going to get some good value out of Aaron Collins. He's a decent talker. He seems to be a very honest lad. And I definitely think that scoring against Cambridge then contributed to probably his best performance at Barnsley. Should have had a penalty, no question. Had a couple of chances and made one. So made one for Adebiejo. So I think that's what you're going to get from him. I think he's a different type of player. And I think that combination with Adebiejo, it looks pretty good at the minute.
It does, yeah. And he almost scored a second, didn't he, against Cambridge? He got one cleared off the line. So, I think he's a good player. You can see the player he is. And I think he's now got two assists, I think, for us, and a goal in his however many games.
That might be three. He's on 10 in total. I know that is because he's level with Sheehan now.
Right. So, you know, he has contributed to four goals then in his time at Bolton. So he's been okay. And I think sometimes you can buy a player for $750,000 and you just, especially for Bolton, you're like, well, this guy needs to hit the ground running. And he did against Barnsley. And then I guess since then you've been waiting for those special moments. And, you know, I was talking to my dad on Saturday before the game and or it might have been at half-time actually. And I said, even though Collins has been a bit quiet, I still expect at some point he's going to get the ball 30 yards and stick it in the top corner. You know he's got that in him. So I'm glad he's had a good week. And, you know, we're saying about Deon Charles coming back. Ian Everett's got a decision to make because at the moment, Collins has had a good week. So how do you drop him? Do you have him? Does he become an impact player again, or does Charles come in as an impact player? He's got that decision to make.
Well, I spoke to John McGinley the other day, just before the Barnsley game, and I asked him, who do you think the best front two are going to be? And he said he feels as if Collins and Charles are going to be able to work together and that they will be the first choice front two. I think Adebiejo can certainly make a claim at the minute until Deon gets up to full speed. But I think in the longer term, you could even potentially put Collins in behind those two and have a kind of a three because he can play that deeper role as well. But it will be interesting. It will be interesting. I think Super John's right. I think eventually they will have to find a way of having Charles and Collins playing in the same team because neither one of them is going to want to play second fiddle to the other. And yet I do feel that Collins can bring more goals out of the players around him. So Deon will definitely benefit from that.
Another man who might benefit is Owen Toll. Owen Toll. Owen Toll. Because he gets the ball, he scores a goal. It's Owen Toll. And he's signed a new contract this week.
He certainly has, but if you work on TalkSport, he's Owen Towel. He gets the ball and scores a goal, apparently. But anyway, Toley got a new 3-year contract, which was announced just before the Barnsley game, which is great news, which is absolutely great news. He's, considering they paid 50 grand for him, to Derry. And there are a couple of bonuses, I think, that are kind of woven into the contract, especially if they go up. So it may not end up being just 50 grand. But I think in terms of business, there are very few better bits of business that Ian Evatt has done, because now he's a fully charged international player, got caps coming up as well. He's very much in the thick of that, and he's a starting player now for Northern Ireland in a team that's being kind of rebuilt for Michael O'Neill. He's got the chance, fingers crossed, to be a championship player. And he's one of those players that I think you could see stepping up and playing regularly in the championship. I don't think there's any question mark over him. There are a few around. Can't wait to have that conversation in the summer. But I think with Toll, he's improving. He's definitely becoming more of a vocal player on the pitch. You can see him kind of pulling people around and you know, pointing and shouting and that kind of stuff, which I think it's important for centre-halves to do that, because they've got a good look at the pitch, etc. They're in a good position to be able to tell other people where they need to be. So, yeah, I think, and he's won the captain's armband a couple of times, hasn't he, in the cup competitions in particular. So I think really he's among Bolton's most consistent and best bits of business so far.
Oh, yeah, he's been fantastic. And, you know, for that amount of money in this day and age to, you know, Toll left us, he's going to make quite a big profit on it. So, and I'm sure that's written into his contract about release clauses and whatever. So, so yeah, it's great to see, and Toll as he came in and he got the opportunity, and he should be an inspiration to some of the other players on the bench. You know, he got his opportunity last year and he took it, and he weren't out of the team then until he was injured in the final. So yeah, it's good to see that he's signed on, and I think, you know, he's just, I don't want us to keep going back to the old days, I guess, but to see that we've not only him, but quite a few players that are on 3-year contracts. Mm. And you believe as well, we're not going to be paying them over the odds and, you know, shackling us with these contracts when we, you know, to that we won't be able to get rid of. You know, we've got assets. I always think with Wigan, like when they were in their situation and we were in ours, the difference was Wigan had assets to sell and they sold them, and yeah, for cheap, but they sold those players, whereas we had, you know, players that didn't have any sell-on value. And I think looking forward long term, obviously we're not going to be in that position again, especially after what we talked about the other week and the fact that we're all billionaires now thanks to that Swiss consortium. But
of course,
but it just shows a plan of the future, and you know, it's we've said before, you know, you look at Peterborough United, for example, they always have, their whole sustainability is the fact that they have at least one player who can go for 5 million, and then that supports them for the next few years.
Mm.
And we're obviously a far bigger club than Peterborough, but you've got to look at it as we need to do that as well. And, you know, we've got Toll and Santos and Charles and whoever else, these players are on contracts, which mean if other teams want them, they're going to have to pay for them.
Absolutely. No, it is looking good on that front. It's also looking pretty good on the email front. My word, I asked for emails over the last couple of weeks and I have been given them. So we're going to have to rattle through a few. Henry, you've got your email head on?
One sec. It's on. I couldn't think of a sound effect. You might have to put that in post.
Take it away, Phil.
Is that Philip Moraes?
Right, it's email time. Yeah, we got loads. I mean, obviously, a lot of these emails kind of allude to the defeats against Blackpool and Wigan, because most of them, I would guess, were written right afterwards. But I've tried to pick out bits that are not necessarily time-tied. So this one's from Greg. As a fan who goes home and away, I'd like to mention the fixture list that Bolton have been battled with this season, as well as the incredible support fans have given the club over this, especially the last 2 months, rather. I've checked out the amount of games that League One clubs have been involved in since the beginning of the year, and Bolton have been involved in significantly more. 17, including two of which were abandoned. So there'll be 18 now. Of the teams challenging to get promoted, Peter and Barnsley had played 13, Portsmouth 11 and Barnsley 10 to that point. By the time this run of two games per week is finished, we'll have played or been involved in 22 different games in 76 days.
Wow.
Which is incredible. So I think no other team has faced such a long and arduous run as this. We're still fighting to go up automatically. And after the Derby game, there is time for a reset. So as long as we keep in touching distance, we'll have a great opportunity. It's credit to the club, the players, and the ridiculously great support of the fans to still be in a good position. I know as a fan, I'm feeling a little fatigued at this run alone, let alone the players. Who've enjoyed a season like none other. It's very hard to criticise Evert and the team with what they've had to cope with. More games in such a short period of time lead to injuries, and we've seen more pressure being put on the remaining players with no time to properly train between games. As a club from the top down, we have shown great resilience to keep battling on. The future is bright. We just need to hang on in there, which I believe we will. Next year, the championship, and strangely enough, a lot fewer games, says Greg. So, not necessarily fewer games, but... I suppose you don't have the trophy, do you, next season, if Bolton were in the championship.
Less cup games.
That's true. That's true. Oh, it's luxury, is what it is. I think the number of games has to be taken into consideration because, I mean, Bolton had obviously had two false starts for no fault of their own against Cheltenham and then against Cambridge, but they had to be kind of built up to and kind of completed, but then obviously rescheduled. So, I mean, there has been a hell of a workload. It's been a lot of travelling. It's been a lot of preparation. And also with it being winter weather and the training pitches are not as good as they could be. They certainly need improving. They haven't been able to train properly. So actually to be in this position still is even better. I know it's never going to suit everybody. There's certainly some people that think we should be 10 points clear at the top of the division. Okay, that's fine. That's your opinion. But honestly, I think all things considered, I think they're doing all right.
Yeah, I mean, they could always be 10 points clear at the top of the division, Mark. Let's not rule that out. But I think that email actually has put things into perspective for especially this calendar year. And if Bolton have played, in some cases, 6 or 7 matches more than others, then, they're going to be a bit of fatigue. But then you look on Tuesday and think, well, they've ended the game really strongly. So there is fatigue. Maybe it's more mental fatigue, but there's definitely physical fatigue. There's not as much. I did think on Tuesday actually for those fans that went and those fans who have no doubt will be going against Derby as well as that, and then they went against Blackpool and Wigan, and I think sometimes in football it's just the small moments that can make up for a whole season in some cases. So I think that goal right at the end was probably made up a little bit for the Wigan and Blackpool defeats for some people, and they'll be buzzing again and then can't wait, some of them, to go to Exeter on Saturday. So, it's one of those things, and this is the thing for Bolton, is that if you are going to be successful, you're going to have to play more games than teams who are not. And we've had a good, we did okay in the FA Cup, and we did okay in the EFL Trophy, and our games, I guess, mean more than, say, a team in mid-table. So there's more pressure on them. So there is that. But we said last month, Bolton need to get through these games. We need to see where we are after we've played our games in hand. Okay, we'd probably have liked the gap on Portsmouth to be less, if not ahead of them. But we're in second, so if you'd have said at that point we will be in second, you would have took it. So I guess that's all we can take.
Yeah, yeah, and Pompey have still got a difficult run in. I'm telling you, it's not over for them either. Right, this one is from Andy. He says, "Hi, Mark, just thought I'd drop you a message this Monday morning following the Cambridge win. I'm flabbergasted with what I'm reading on Twitter or X or whatever Musk is calling it this week. Fans this morning are losing their heads and God knows what else over Ian Everett saying he'd look at things in the summer. Isn't that normal standard for any manager? Secondly, do fans seriously want him to go and why are they calling for his head? We're second in the league with 10, 11 games left. Destiny is in our own hands." He says, "Avoid defeat against Derby and we'll be fine come the end of the season. Would we seriously want it any other way than having to go to Peterborough on the last game and get something? That would be boring." Great podcast, by the way. It makes my Friday drive home from work enjoyable, negotiating the M60/M61 rush at rush hour. So safe journey, Andy. So do we want it to be boring? Would you want to go to Peterborough, already promoted, and just be able to sit there sipping cocktails with Dara, with nothing really riding on the game, just looking ahead and flicking through a championship brochure and wondering which hotel to stay in Norwich next season?
Well, first of all, if there's anything on it for Peterborough, then I do not want to be anywhere near Dara, because that would be a nightmare. And second of all, funny you mentioned Norwich, because a mate of mine's a Norwich fan, so that is one of the games I will be going to next year. So I already have accommodation sorted for that. Mm. But if going back to the question in hand, and less about my social calendar, I mean, yeah, it's all, if we go to Peterborough on the last game needing a win, then I don't trust that we'll do that, because Peterborough are a very good team. If we need to avoid losing 10-0, then that'd be quite nice, and it'd be nice to do it. But then again, doing it the last home game of the season would be nice as well. I tell you what, though, me and my wife and my son, we're taking him to Spain for the first time, and I allowed my wife to book it, and I was just like, yeah, just book it for whenever. And she's actually booked us to fly out for a few weeks. So we're flying out at, I think, 4:20 on the day of the Port Vale home game. So that's the Brief. Next to last game of the season. So if we need a win on that game, I won't find out till like 7 at night. So I actually hope that we can do it with 3 games to go. So it makes my life a lot easier. Otherwise, I'm going to be very stressed on a plane for the first time with my son. And also, I don't fancy going to Peterborough and needing something either. So let's try and make it easy. Let's try and make it easy this time, and let's do it. That Portsmouth game, I think it's free to go to the end of the season. Let's do it then. Let's win promotion against Portsmouth. It's going to be very difficult. How are we going to end up 9 points above everyone else by that time? But that would be my perfect scenario.
Think positive. It's the media, yeah. It's the local media day out at Peterborough as well, by the way. So we'll have probably been out on the Friday night. It'd be nice if it was just a nice little chillax, nothing riding on the results. Jack will have his Bermuda shorts on, no doubt. So, yeah, who knows? Right, you fancy a bit of Who Are You?
Blink, and you missed him.
Who are you?
Here today, gone tomorrow.
Who are you?
Blink, and you missed him.
Who are you?
Here today, gone tomorrow.
So we didn't do it last week because, it was more serious things to talk about last week. This week it's Q, and to be completely frank, nobody really gave me any options, so it wasn't brilliant. But I have now managed to. I'm just trying to cut and copy and can you tell I'm trying to delay matters whilst I'm cutting and copying?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just. This is how the pros do it, folks. So, Q. Obviously, nobody's come up with any Bolton players that start with Q. I don't know how many there were. To be honest, I don't think there are any. Thinking back to the old Danny Shittu days, I think Q was a no go, wasn't it?
I think it was. Yeah. So I did wonder when we got to Q how you'd negotiate around that.
Well, this is how I did it, you see. So I've come up with a couple of little stories, which you can still rate on the Josh Dacres Cogley scale, but they're not going to be as awe inspiring potentially as some. You never know. You might like this. So the first one is Jimmy Quinn. Jimmy Quinn, who was Northern Irish striker back in the day, in the 90s and 80s and 90s. Reading's player boss in the playoff semi-final, player final rather, at Wembley. Mm-hmm. So Jimmy Quinn was like I say, player manager, sat on the bench. Jason McAteer brings down, I think it was Michael Jilks for the penalty. Reading winning 2-0 at that point in time. It was a pivotal moment in Bolton Wanderers history, let's be honest. So up steps Stuart Lovell for the penalty. Now, I'm going to refer to an interview that Jason McAteer gave on a podcast I listened to. And apparently, at that point in time, Jimmy Quinn was readying himself to bring himself on for Stuart Lovell so he could take the responsibility of the penalty. So it was obviously so pivotal on the outcome of the game. But he didn't do it in time, and Lovell stepped up, took the penalty. Brannigan with the save, of course. The rest is absolute history. Bolton come back, go to extra time, then win the game. So wow. If Quinn brings himself on, if Quinn can get his boots on quick enough or get his shell suit top off or whatever else it was in the mid-90s, how does Bolton Wanderers history change from there?
That's I've never heard that story before. That's fascinating because it was in the first half as well. So it would have been, I mean, I do agree with him that 3-0, and I think a lot of Bolton fans there on the day, and I think Brannigan has said this as well, but 3-0 would have been game over. So maybe he could have done like a quarterback role and took himself back off, even though they only had three subs then, I guess. But that's very interesting. I've never heard that before. And who knows what would have happened if he would have been able to bring himself on quicker.
Well, Reading score that goal and Bolton don't go up. They don't win that game. It just doesn't happen. The whole psychology of the game totally changes. Bruce Rioch, I seem to recall that he had spoken to Arsenal by that point in time, but maybe there's a universe there that Bolton... That he doesn't get that promotion, so he doesn't necessarily have the kind of aura and the CV that attracts Arsenal to make that offer for him. So Bruce Rioch stays and then builds again the next season. Could it have been a bad thing? Could Bruce Rioch have then spared us the single season where they were woefully kind of inadequate in the Premier League and gone up a la Colin Todd 96-97? Who knows?
Maybe, but then the last season at Burnden would have probably been bottom of the Premier League, so instead
there
of 100 points.
Yeah. There is that.
That's an interesting one. I'm gonna put that as a 7, actually. That is quite it's quite interesting that he possibly would have done that. Obviously didn't, and it didn't matter in the end. Bolton won, and for many Bolton fans, that is the greatest moment in Bolton watching history. I was a bit too young. I only started watching us in that last season at Burnden. So mine probably remains the Wilbraham goal for a single moment, where a game would have to be probably Plymouth, actually.
You reckon the Sheehan goal, it wasn't the Sheehan goal, it was Randall Williams goal, will go down in the same kind of folklore? I mean, I can remember the likes of when Beavers scored at Southend, for example, yeah. or when Sean Miller scored at Southend, for example. Lots of things happen at Southend. Kind of promotion seasons, you get those little moments and that shine out. And you suspect that if Bolton do get promoted, fingers crossed, touch wood, that goal will be one of those.
Yeah, definitely. There's, I think you've got to be there as well. I wasn't there on Tuesday, so even though it was a great moment, I just think the whole build-up, if you were in that away end, the whole last half an hour build-up and just peppering the goal that's in front of you and then to finally get that equaliser, I'm sure it was a great moment. But for some people, that would be definitely up there.
Certainly made some noise. Right, okay, my second and final cue of the week is Qatar. So the year is 2006, is a simpler time. And Luis Fernandez has been claiming for a couple of months that JJ Okocha is on his way to Qatar. He'd worked with him at Paris Saint-Germain. Now, Okocha said it wasn't happening. Then it was happening. He said he'd turned down a few of the bigger clubs in Europe because he didn't actually get a wage offer that was high enough to match what he was on at Bolton. So that's why he played for some of the kind of lesser lights, is that he actually was earning more as at a lesser light like Bolton, as opposed to going to play for Manchester United or what have you. So he wasn't earning enough. But now this is maybe a reflection of how sport has changed. But I found an article that said that JJ Okocha had become the highest paid player in Qatar's history, earning a staggering £1 million a year. £1 million a year. Now, nowadays, I reckon Cristiano Ronaldo is probably earning £1 million a second doing what he's doing in the Middle East.
So this was
simpler times. He only lasted a year there, JJ, and then he finished his career at Hull City. As we know, he went back, played for Phil Brown. He actually said he was bored in Qatar. Played 18 times for Hull, but this is the little nugget. So he played 18 times for Hull, and a lot of people that saw that season, they actually got promoted to the Premier League in his only season. But a lot of people said that he actually should have played more games. He was so good, but they just couldn't play him. Phil Brown played 4-4-2, and they couldn't find a place on the pitch for JJ Okocha to play. But Brownie tells this story, so I'm going to paraphrase it because I haven't got it on record. But basically, he turned up for training at Hull, and he was in this Ferrari, and all the players came out to have a look at it. And apparently, as well as being an absolutely amazing motor, it was actually covered in mould. And so they're like, what on earth is happening? He's like, why have you got a Ferrari covered in mould? And he said apparently that he'd forgotten he had the car. It was in one of his older houses and he just left it in the garage and he'd only just gone to pick it up. JJ Okocha was so rich and so extravagant that he forgot he had a Ferrari.
Wow. I think JJ, not only the way he played on the pitch, but in general, I mean, I've never met the guy, but what I've seen in interviews, he seemed a very laid-back person, so it doesn't surprise me now.
Yeah, yeah. Give us a Josh Dacres-Cogley on that one.
Well, I mean, JJ forgetting he's got a Ferrari, pushed it up a little bit, but five.
I'll take that. It was a really difficult week, Q, but next week, what are we on? PQR. It's R. You said loads of stuff. So I want you to send your emails, and you know the address by now. If you don't know the address, then it's in the podcast notes because I want to make it easy for myself in edit. So there we go. Right, let's have some predictions.
Pass us my crystal ball. What's happening next week?
Prediction time. So it's another long week, a long trip to Exeter City. I'm going on Friday night with Mr. Dearden. We're going to go, breaking the trip down actually, I'm going to go and watch Saints versus Salford Rugby League and then travel down to Birmingham after that. And then down to Exeter on Saturday morning, so it's not quite as bad as it could be. It's a slightly better trip, but really, they should be playing in France. But let's be fair. I mean, it's barely England, is it?
No, I've never been, but I am aware that there's not much of England left after Exeter.
It really isn't. It's a lovely place, Exeter. It really is. It's a very, very pretty city.
The ground look a bit.
It's very mismatched, the ground. The higgledy-piggledy, and there's houses overlooking it and all that kind of thing, which, you know, some people find charming. But I have to say, after several years at League One and Two level, I've had enough of oddball, charming grounds. Give me some really big stadia with great Wi-Fi and comfortable press seats and plug sockets. Just
give me half empty stadiums, but I'm warm, I have a nice cup of tea, and I've got Wi-Fi. That's what you want, Mark.
That's what I want. That's what I want. I don't care about football's charm anymore. I really don't. But anyway, Exeter. It's a tough one, and obviously, because of what happened earlier in the season in November, 7-0 at the Tough Sheet, people will be looking at this and thinking, you've got to win this, you've got to win this one. But the emotion of Tuesday night, sometimes that kind of thing can adversely affect you going into a game, especially a longer away trip. They did it, if you remember, the Papa John's last season, they went to Exeter afterwards and scraped to win. It was a really good win, considering the circumstances. And it's kind of the same sort of situation, is that they put so much into Barnsley at the end. The emotion will you get that high, but then actually you go low afterwards, don't you? So they're going to have to pick themselves up again and go again. I'm expecting plenty of changes. How do you see the game going out?
I think it's same as last year. I think we'll win 1-0. I think it'll be... Yeah, they'll be up for it. And I think Bolton have to combat that. And you've just got to forget that game happened earlier in the season, really. Because, I mean, Exeter are a different team now. They were down and out a bit at that point. And now they're not. And they've recently got some good results. They beat Peterborough recently, and they beat Barnsley recently. So they're a good team. So yeah, we just need to go. If we play our own game, we have the majority to play. Just keep it tight at the back. We'll be fine. And this is what it'll be for the rest of the season. We are better than the vast majority of teams in this league. In fact, as I've said before, I think we've got the best team in the league. There's only one or two, maybe, well, three teams, I guess. Well, four if you have Peterborough, but there's only four other teams that
five,
I feel...
22, 23.
Yeah. We should be out of the playoffs. No, I think there's only a handful of teams who could argue that they're better than us. So we have to treat it that way, and we have to be confident. And I think if we... I know, again, cliche. I know Ian Everett said it, but if we play... You know, if we play like, how we know we can play, we'll be fine and we'll win most games, and I think that'll start on Saturday.
Yeah, it's that bravery thing, isn't it? That's the... It works when they are confident and when they're brave on the ball. And if you had a switch you could flick at the start of a game and to happen straight away, then I'm sure they will have done that by now. But yeah, it's going to be a tough one. I think they'll scrape it. I think they'll get a result down there. I'm quietly confident, and who knows whether we see Dion Charles or not, but he may do Exeter. Will he do Oxford? I think it's more likely, I think, on the Tuesday. A game, obviously, tough sheet, pitch immaculate, although Exeter's is always very good as well, but immaculate pitch at Oxford, at home to Oxford. TV cameras there. Aaron Morley setting himself up for another 25-yard screamer, no doubt. But again, you know, you don't want to look past Oxford, but it's even though they are up the top end of the table, I still feel pretty confident that Bolton will match them because of the type of team they are.
Oh, yeah, I think... and I think Oxford, since their manager left... where did he go? I can't remember.
Well, it's Liam Manning, of course. He went to Bristol City. We definitely didn't put that in post-edit, did we?
No, we definitely haven't spent the last 2 minutes going from me to you going, who was that? What did he do?
I don't think Jim Liam Smith was a very good...
since he's left, the momentum's gone a bit, and he's still hanging on around the playoffs. But I think they're there to be taken, and I think we'll be fine. I think we'll get the win. It'll be like a 2-0, I'd imagine. And we'll be fine. Look, I mean, the Exeter game for me is the more tricky game. I think at home we're okay. We've got a very good record at home. If we can record next week off the back of 6 points, who knows? We might still be just a point above Derby, or we might actually be 4 points above Derby and suddenly things are very rosy. So we'll wait and see. But yeah, all Bolton can do is win the games, I guess.
A statement on the telly, that sounds good to me. A really good performance that sends out a message to everybody else in League One, in particular Derby County, who will be coming next up, of course, just before the international break. And we'll be building up towards that very, very, very big game in next week's edition of the Buff Podcast. But this one is a wrap. Bolton, 4 points this week. They're back second place, they're back in the thick of it. People are smiling again. Please, please, please give us more of that. Until next week, I've been Mark Isles.
And I've been Henry Hewitt.
And this has been The Buff.